Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Canadian jazz flute player Tom Keenlyside. We had a great talk about his new 2022 CD, A Night at the Espresso, the COVID-19 world, his long life in music, and the hopeful future. When he was 13 in 1964, he was at a friend's house and his mother was playing the record Time Out by the Dave Brubeck Quartet, a classic. And when he heard Paul Desmond on Strange Meadowlark, he was instantly hooked. He knew in that moment that music was going to be what he would do for the rest of his life. He didn't know how, but he's figured it out. And the adventure has ensued ever since. Dig this cool tale.
Tom, thanks for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz today. I appreciate it.
Joe, it's a pleasure.
A Night at the Espresso, you know, there's a couple things that go into this. I'm thinking, you know, we haven't had live music for a long time. Hopefully the world's waking up. It's coming out during, hopefully, the tail end of COVID. What does this release mean for you?
It's kind of that. I've actually put out a couple of different albums during the COVID time. And I've done a lot of recording in my home studio during the COVID time, doing tracks for other people. I play the saxophone too, so doing tracks for other people. But just that intensity of when I was a kid, like 14, 15 years old, and going into this jazz club, getting my butt kicked by all these older musicians, the sense of community and everything was like unbelievably intense for me. And that was kind of what I was trying to relive with this album. And it was great. You know, it's all live stuff. So we recorded in a room together. It was pretty spectacular.
So yeah. Over this COVID time that we've lived through, you know, quarantine and activity's been limited, there's been a lot of self-reflection. So I'm curious, what did you learn about yourself over this last 2 years that maybe you didn't realize before that's going to make you stronger as we reemerge and you promote this new album?
That's a really great question. One thing I learned that I could actually entertain myself pretty well. So I spent a lot of time in making music for other people and also making my own music, and realizing that it really brings home that you have one life to live, and you really have to make the most of it. Even though there were constraints on seeing people and getting together and all that stuff, you just try to make things work, and that's kind of what I concentrated on. I was quite pleased with. It was really a drag, but I was ultimately pleased with some aspects of it, you know, just kind of feeling good about being able to make things work in unworkable times.
I think that's a great point, and I've thought about that a lot during this. You know, life has a monopoly on you, and you still have to live. You can't look back and say, oh, well, you know, I'll get back to it, because we don't know what we're getting back to. And this, you know, and I would think for an artist, you know, this is the world's Bob Dylan moment. I mean, in America, too, you know, we had the George Floyd incident. There's so many things that are happening right now that never happened before. We don't want to see these things happen, but, you know, sometimes out of these events, you know, things can get fleshed out and things can get better.
Well, exactly. And the intensity that's actually added to it with social media and everything like that just gives it an unbelievable edge, all that stuff. So it's interesting times we live in. Not necessarily all good, but, you know, we just make the best of it, you know.
Yeah, you absolutely do. So you had a great lineup on this album. You have Miles Black on piano, Miles Hill on bass. You had, I love Brad Turner. You just had a great lineup. That had to be
Brad's,
fun to make.
By the way, Brad's my cousin.
Oh, cool. From the word go, Brad kind of reminds me of Corey Weeds. I mean, the minute I listened to him, I was like, wow, this is powerful. You know, everything is powerful.
Yeah, Brad goes deep right away.
Mm.
And Corey's a fantastic player. At one time, he was a saxophone student of mine, Corey.
Oh, wow. Right on.
Yeah, but long time ago, and he's a great player. Corey's terrific.
You know, everything began for you. I love how you weave together the story of, you know, hearing Dave Brubeck and specifically Paul Desmond, and you were hooked.
Yeah.
You didn't know how you were going to do it. Yeah, so talk to me about that moment and what happened after that.
I have an old friend of mine, and I mean an old friend, but we met when we were 7 years old, and we're still really close friends. So it's 64 years of knowing the guy. Anyway, I used to walk to school with him, to high school with him every day. And I was in just grade 8, and I was just going up to his house, and his front door was open, and his mom had a record on. And it was Strange, it was the timeout record, and it was Strange Meadowlark. And Dave just finished his opening cadenza. And he does that right rev up. And then he does the four chord intro into the thing, and Paul Desmond picks it up. And I heard that, and I went, that's what I'm doing for the rest of my life. And I'm telling you the truth, that is completely true. I heard that, and it was just like a siren song. I couldn't believe the poetry in it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So that really hugely affected me.
So how did the career begin for you, and kind of start taking off? What were the beginnings for you?
You know, back then I started playing gigs when I was 14, and just playing like dances and legions and old folks homes and bar mitzvahs and that kind of thing. The kind of stuff you played were the hits of the day, but a lot of the hits of the day were Great American Songbook hits. So, which is, you know, and the Great American Songbook is one of the great artistic treasures of any civilization, as far as I can tell. So we would play those tunes, and I got really... I got so that I could play those tunes by heart, so I know thousands of tunes, I guess, and a lot of it is just kind of just from hearing them and playing them when I was a kid and playing through them and scuffling through chord changes back then and trying to figure it out. You know, I went through high school, and I was a kind of an indifferent student and all that stuff because I actually knew what I wanted to do, and I was playing trumpet back then. Then I just started playing gigs and just fell into the life. It was like, I'm not going to do anything else. This is kind of the gig. So I joined bands, and then I kept playing dances, and then I started doing some studio work and doing a few things here and there. And then I got into the disco age, where every single jingle had a 4-bar saxophone solo, and I played in Vancouver anyway. I played most of them, all of them actually at the time. And then I got into, you know, it was an evolution of stuff. And then I started playing for other people, and, you know, it was an amazing kind of seamless journey into something, you know, like it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, so what was the first live jazz show that you ever saw that really made you think, wow, this is wondrous?
The first live jazz show I saw was the Jerry Mulligan Sextet with Bob Brookmeyer. I was about 15, I guess. And then, and who else was on that? Vince Guaraldi Trio was on there, and the Modern Jazz Quartet, right. It was a three-act bill. And then I saw the Dave Brubeck Quartet with the original quartet shortly after that, when I was 16, I think. Then Vancouver, at that point, had a lot of jazz acts going through, like really a lot, and a little later, even more. So, I mean, I was able to see Bill Evans and Sonny Rollins and Charlie Mingus and Stan Getz, and all the great players came through Vancouver and would play in these clubs. And I would go in, often underage, and sneak in and see all these people play. You know, I saw Duke Ellington and, you know, all sorts of things. So it was amazing. But the first one was the Jerry Mulligan Sextet with Bob Brookmeyer.
Talk to me a little bit about what you like the best about being a professional musician.
Well, first of all, it keeps you on your toes for sure, because you always have to be in shape to play right now. A lot of the stuff you do professionally is really easy. Like, it's, you know, you go into a jingle session, or you go and play it for an act that's coming into town, and the parts are really easy, and the, you know, the reading is really easy, and the tunes are simple and all that stuff. But every so often you have to whip it out and actually play something that's really hard. So you always have to have your game at the top of its game, even though you're not using all those cylinders. You know, you always have to have stuff in on the back burner to be able to play all that stuff. So that's really great. Playing a huge variety of music, you know, like I play jazz, I play a lot of rock and roll, I play country music, I play whatever is coming out, and that the variety is fantastic. And I've played with a lot of people, and it's the variety's tremendous. And the other thing is, there are no, you know, in my mind, there's no better or more interesting or more fun or more intelligent or more creative people to hang around with than musicians. I mean, I just love my pals, and we just get along famously, and we laugh our heads off, basically. So it's a pretty good gig.
If you could get into a time machine and go back in time and see anybody in the history of jazz, who would you go see?
Well, a couple things. My friend Rick Kilburn, after Eugene Wright left the Dave Brubeck Quartet, Rick Kilburn was one of the bass players that played with Dave. And Rick was an old friend of mine from, you know, when we were teenagers. We used to play jazz together. He came to town. He was passing through Vancouver. And we got together and went to chat, and he says, "You got to come to New York, because we'll take a bottle of scotch over and we'll go to Paul Desmond's apartment and hang out with him all night." And I went, "Yeah, I'm in." And we couldn't pull it together. It never happened. So I wish that would have happened. That would have been really fun. But the act that I missed, I would have liked to have seen Sun Ra. That would have been really exciting. Yeah, really exciting. Let's see, who else would I like to have seen? Count Basie, I never saw Count Basie. That would have been fantastic. There's a saxophone player named Plas Johnson, and I missed him, and he was one of my heroes. He was the guy who played the saxophone on the Pink Panther.
Yeah.
And he's an unbelievably great saxophone player. He's just so swinging, it's not funny, so I wish I'd seen him. There's probably tons of others, but, you know.
Yeah, totally. So let's say you have a dream tonight, and you run into your younger self around the time you were starting your professional life, and you could give your younger version a piece of advice based on the wisdom that you've gained over all these years. What would that advice be?
Wow, what a great question. You know, I mean, the obvious one would be just don't give up, because it's a new day around the corner. But I kind of always knew that, and that's why I kept in there. I guess I knew it instinctively. So let's see, what would I say to myself now that I didn't know then? Don't take it seriously. Don't take it too seriously, and stay true to what you believe. So if you chase around a bunch of stuff that it doesn't feel right, it probably isn't right.
Cool. So, you know, when we do kind of return to live music in earnest, what do you hope the audiences realize after 2 years, largely 2 years away from live music, both audience and musician, about the power of live music?
You know, what I would say to that is, obviously, I would hope that people would realize the importance of it when it was going on. And I just was over in Germany, and I played in two years ago, and I played in a club called D Flat in Berlin with a bass player named Robin Dragonek, who is really a great bass player and some really great players. The club was packed. It was absolutely jam packed, and there was a staircase in the back, and they were all sitting on the stairs all the way up. And I was just sort of a one night guest of the thing, and you can hear a pin drop, and people are actually listening to the music. And, you know, if you go into any club, pretty well, not every club, but, you know, most clubs in Canada or the United States, people are talking and all that, and that's all fine, except it would be really nice if there was a bit more sort of attention paid to what people were doing up there on the stage. Because, you know, really, like, a lot of people don't listen. they just kind of window dressing or something like that. I call it jazz wallpaper, and that's too bad, because it is America's art form. It was invented by great Americans, and you know, and it should be completely honored. And it doesn't mean that people have to just completely clam up and everything, but it's just showing a bit of tasteful respect, I would say.
Yeah. So everyone has a perception of you, an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you have a perception of yourself. Who do you think you are?
A lot of me says that I'm just sort of a good time Charlie and I just want to have a good time all the time. And kind of it's true. But, you know, I do have a serious side. So, and at this point in my career, like I played everybody else's music for a really long time. You know, I played on a lot of people's albums and played with people coming through town and stuff like that. And I was playing their music. But now is a time in my life where, I'm playing my music, and I'm playing music that I want to play with the people I want to play with, who are all brilliant musicians. And so I think I've discovered a more sort of artistic side of me that it has been kind of sleeping. So I like that.
Right on. Right on, man.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, that was a great answer. I love it. Hey, thank you for taking some time out today, Tom. I really appreciate it. Good luck with the album and the return to the stage.
Hey, Joe, no problem. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks. You asked great questions.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest cats in Vancouver, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Tom for his time, music, and stories. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.